In this episode of Podcast Tactics, you'll get tips and advice from your mind's best friend. Today's guest is a podcaster that created a live stream show that delves into topics that inspire different points of view and encourages independent free thinking. I'm James, the host of Podcast Tactics. If you want to keep learning about podcasting, get inspired, and stay motivated, join the mailing list at podcasttactics.com. Thanks for listening. Let's get into it. Joining me right now is veteran podcaster Matt Napo from Shoreham, New York. Matt, thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So let's jump right in. Let's talk about your podcast. What's the name and what's it all about?
Well, my podcast is called the Mind Dog TV Podcast, and it's the main mission of it is to promote free thinking, critical thinking, and get people to actually think for themselves and not parrot other people's ideas. The whole idea being everybody has a right to an opinion, but most people give up their right to opinion to share other people's opinions with passion. And my mission and goal is to get people to rethink that and put things in their own words and come up with their own ideas and be passionate about those rather than other people's ideas.
That's really powerful. I love that as a mission for what you're up to. It's you know, it does come across. We'll get into, you know, your episodes in a little bit, but it definitely does come across as a theme inside of your episodes.
Well, thank you.
I want to back up a little bit and just kind of talk about your background.
In 1988 to 1992, I hosted a radio show here, AM radio, local talk radio, long before the internet. It was called The Mind Dog, The Magnificent Show. And basically, what I did was I talked to a lot of psychics, paranormal people, UFOs, Bigfoot people like that. And it was, but mixed with comedy and skepticism. At one point, I ended up getting fired from the radio station I was at because they did not have a 7-second delay, and I was sloppy and immature. It was a long story, and it's kind of amusing, so I'm going to tell it anyway. So my friend was getting married that day. We had a conflict. I could not start the show on time. I had another friend start the show for me while I went to the wedding. A girl I was with ended up being very flirtatious with my friend's father, and I was getting jealous and upset, and I got drunk at the wedding. So I showed up at the radio station. My friend, who was subbing for me for the first hour, was panicking because he couldn't take a phone call because the engineer did not know how to put a phone call through the and he had Tony Danza on the line, who was at that time pretty big celebrity in the US. And so I was drunk and I was angry, and I just started shouting at the engineer, and it was a joke at first. I started saying, put a friggin' phone call through. And then eventually it friggin' turned into a full blown F-bomb, and without the 7-second delay, it was just like, I knew what my career was over at that moment anyway, but it was a temper tantrum type of thing. Young, you know, but I always wanted to get back into radio, long story short. So, I did not have the opportunity. I was in a lot of other things, still playing music, still doing a lot of entertainment things. And then at some point I said, you know what, I'd really like to get back into radio. Around 2009, I started a podcast, did what a lot of podcasters do, pod faded after it did not pick up. You know, there's no hope for this. This isn't real radio. This is, you know, nobody's interested in this. I gave up on it. And then all of a sudden people started being noticed with podcasts. And I said, you know, I was a little bit hasty to make that decision 10 years ago, 11 years ago, whatever it was. So I decided to try it again. And then I found like I rediscovered my purpose. I feel like I'm doing radio now the way radio should have been done. Sorry, I know that was a long answer, but it's...
I love the backstories, you know, the origin stories is really where it comes from for me, you know, like that's, I love digging into that kind of stuff. So let's talk about, you know, the challenges that you're experiencing with podcasting. You know, it could be something from, you know, something that you were trying to break through in the beginning or what you're running up against today.
There are a lot of challenges. You know, a lot of people who I talk to in podcasting, their biggest challenge is monetization. That is, you know, for me, that's not my concern. My concern is doing the best show I possibly can. And for me, that meant at least starting off that I needed to get good fast. And so I focused on quantity. Meaning I've done 410 shows in 16 months, 402 hour shows in 16 months, which is a lot to produce and get out there and all that. But in focusing on quantity, the quality has not always been great. But, and I mean by that, the quality is the guest, right? And so I've had some, not a lot, but not by percentage wise, but five or six shockingly bad guests that have been like really hard to navigate, manage, and because I like the spontaneity and don't do a pre-interview, I'm often surprised. And I've been biggest challenges for me have been those surprising moments where so I was expecting to see a stand-up comedian, and I do StreamYard, I do live streams, and so in my setup, I'm in the left window and the guest is in the right window. And so we start the show, the intro comes on, and I come in and I welcome the people in, and I look over in the window and I said, looks like the guy's in a jet. So I welcome him in. I think he's in a private jet. And I said, are you in a jet? He said, no, it's a GMC Jimmy. he said, it's home right now. He's homeless, living Whoa. In a GMC Jimmy, and that's his wife in the back there. So he's living in a GMC with a Jimmy with his wife. He's in a Target parking garage because that's what they're living off their Wi-Fi in the Target parking garage. And so I said, well, how are you doing stand-up comedy living out of your car like this? It's got to be tough. He said, oh, I'm not doing stand-up comedy anymore. I'm a sex worker now.
Surprise.
Right. He's 60 years old, or around 60 years old. He's got diabetes really bad, so bad that he's only got one eye left, that one functioning eye, and the other eye is kind of closed. And he's all raggedy looking and scraggly looking. And so 60 some odd years old, freaky looking. Who's paying this? You for sex. and he said, you'd be surprised. There's a lot of young girls who have a daddy fantasy. I was like, oh, my God. and I said, you're not, you know, this isn't with pedophiles. He said, well, you know, you're not, I mean, not children. You're not doing, like, pedophile stuff. He said, well, no, not in the best of all worlds. But, you know, on Pornhub, you know, they verify people. And then I found out that Pornhub, where he was going to, wasn't verifying people. So there was a chance. But it was just a really uncomfortable and disarming type of thing to find out in the middle of an interview that this guy is not a stand-up comedian. He's a sex worker doing live sex videos with his wife in the car for possibly teenage girls or whatever, young children.
Wow.
Possibly, yeah. So I never aired that one. I had to scrap that one.
Yeah, that was going to be my follow-on question.
Yeah, no, but I did start a fundraiser to get them out of the car and get them out of being homeless. And,
oh, nice.
And we ended up raising a total of $57, I think.
Oh. Every little bit helps.
Yeah, but so that was last December, and I was wondering... I was wondering how they were going to make it through the winter. But, you know, so I'm guessing they're still in their car in a Target parking mall. But things like that, having guests on in the last minute, I had a, you know, number of guests like that in succession that really made me question, you know, is this worth it? You know, there are great interviews you do where you come away and say, wow, that was really a great piece. It was fun to do. It added a lot of value for the listeners, for the audience. And then there are nights where you come away and you say, why am I even bothering? This is nonsense. There are just too many crazy people looking for attention out there. So it's been that's been my greatest challenge is walking that line between finding quality guests and just letting everybody who requests an interview on my show be on. And I've kind of changed that. Actually, today was the first time I actually said to a guest, listen, I don't think you're right for the show. I know you're really passionate about what you do, but I just don't see an angle that adds any quality for the listeners, for the audience. There's no value in it for them or for me having you on. The only person getting any value is you. So, I mean, I can't be a charity about just giving away attention for people, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And it takes time and energy to do this too. You know, I mean, it's not something that, you know, you just like, it's not like picking up the phone and, you know, having a conversation, even though it is a conversation.
Yeah.
There's an effort on the back end of it too, to, you know, produce these things and
sure. And
put them together.
Fight. you have to at least know who you're talking to. And so, and when doing the back story on her and trying to get some research on her, it's like I couldn't find anything that added value for the audience, which is my prime concern. Like, am I doing this to add value, or are we just doing this as an exercise? Because if it's just an exercise, we can just have that conversation. But I don't necessarily have to publish it for the world, because there's no value in it.
Do you think you're going to start pre-interviewing people?
No, I'm going to do more research when the requests come in. Because usually the way I have a request form on my website, and they fill it out. It comes in. I almost automatically say confirmed. They give them the date they want, and then do the research afterwards. Now I'm going to start doing the research before we confirm, because that's where I've made my mistake. Let's find out about the person before we say okay. And then, but there are times when the research wouldn't have helped anyway, because the sex worker guy. He still had his bio listed as stand-up comic. He didn't, and he wasn't homeless when he built his bio. The funny thing about him, he was booked by a publicist. And how does a homeless guy afford a publicist? I'm working off two shows. I'm working, a musician thing and the podcasting. I don't have a publicist. How does a homeless guy have a publicist? And so I never got an answer to that. Like, I guess the guy's working on spec or whatever. But so there are times when research won't even help. One of my guests who was at Hollywood, the go-to dwarf actor. He was the Howard the Duck. He was Chucky, the voice of Chucky, and did all the stunt work for Chucky. So, doing research on him came up. Yeah, he had this reputation. He's been in many, many films. But when he got on, he was not a good guest.
Okay. Did that end up going up?
I think I had to pull that down because he was overtly racist, and he was throwing N-bombs around and
yikes.
Insane conversation. He was like, and he was very angry little man.
In terms of your form that's on your website, I'm going into the weeds here a little bit because I'm curious about, like, how people book through you, so that you have that form, they fill it out, and then do you give them access to your booking calendar?
The first form that I generally go send people to is an interview request form that says, basically a little bit about them. Just name what they do, what they want to promote, that kind of stuff. It's very short form. We get that, and then I look it over and say, what is it? Is it something we'd like to have on the show? If first glance it does, we send them to the booking calendar. They pick the dates because I do two shows, one currently doing two shows, one at 1 p.m. and one at 8 p.m., and then they can pick Monday through Friday, any date that's open, either one of those slots, and when they do, we confirm it, and then we send a login eventually, and basically that's how it works.
We talked about the challenges. Those are always fun to talk about. But let's talk about some successes. What do you, what have you encountered as a win? Well, yep.
The greatest win, and I think most podcasters would, have a dream guest, right? When you do this, you think, well, who would I really love to get on? And that could be a pie in the sky thinking Oprah. I'd like to get Oprah on. I'd like to get Dave Chappelle on, whatever. My dream guest was Doug Stanhope. One day on Twitter last April, I was just on Twitter at like 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and I saw Doug Stanhope said, posted, I'd like to try one of those Zoom meetings. Somebody send me a link. So I sent them a link, and I was like, he's not going to come, pop. And I went to walk away, and all of a sudden I heard that little pop that says somebody's in, and I looked down, and I was like, holy crap, it's him. So I did an impromptu interview with him, and I was not really professional at it. At the first crack, I was so excited, like a 13-year-old girl, and Elvis knocked on the door and wants to come in for tea or something.
Yeah.
And so I was just fan, like, a typical fan gushing over him and all this stuff. And I was excited to have him. But I felt like I did a terrible job as a podcaster, and I wasn't ready. I didn't have my studio in order. I was in a sweat jacket and all that stuff. So then when he was ready to promote his book, I sent him an invite, and he was gracious enough to do a real interview, and I felt like that was redemption. And I felt like that was my my best moment of podcasting, because I actually got to fix something I did wrong, or in my mind I did wrong the first time. Although he said he enjoyed the first one, and I've gotten a lot of great feedback from the first one, I felt like I was, you know, just a silly fan.
Is that one still up? Is that still available for a listen?
It is. Yeah, okay. It's called Accidental Day Drinking Guest or something. Because he
what a great title.
Yeah, he was drunk. He was drinking and getting drunk, which was why he did it. But so that made for a great interview too, because he's best when he's had a few.
That's awesome. Primarily, your show is an interview show. Is there any preparation that you do? How does that look? What kind of advice could you give somebody who might be starting out?
I would say forget too much preparation. Don't over prepare. That's what I would say. Now, I know a lot of people would disagree with me on that. What I do is I get a good sense of the person, what they do, why they do it, and I don't go too deep. I don't dig too deep into the weeds. Who are you? What do you do? And why do you do it? And get that sense. And then I say the next part of it, try to establish rapport with them and then be a good listener. So you know what your first question is going to be usually, and you know you can it, but I would say that first question should be the first question of the interview, not of the rapport breaking rapport establishing moment. So you have that few moments where you just ask them where they're from, what they're doing, what's the weather like, where, you know, make a little bit of small talk, and then your first question. From there, it's just listening and reacting. You let them do the talking, and they're going to say something in that answer that's going to say, you know what, this written question I have down for my next question, it's not as important as what I just heard them say, and I'm going to react to what I just heard them say. And for me, that formula works. And I've gotten rave reviews from the people who've been on my show, said, you know, I really enjoyed this more than any other podcast I've been on. In fact, yeah, Keith Lowell Jensen just, he said that to me. He's been on a thousand of them. And he was on 3 weeks ago, and he put a post up on Twitter and Facebook that said, this guy's the best. Out of all the interviews I've done in the last 20 years, this was the most fun and most insightful. This guy really had prepared well. And I didn't prepare. I don't prepare. I don't over-prepare. I prepare minimally. So that's a extreme compliment to me when I hear things like that.
That sounds like a win to me.
Yeah, it's an illusion of being supremely prepared when all you're doing really is being a really good listener and really having that genuine curiosity and interest in your guest.
That listening part is definitely, I mean, as you're talking, I'm like looking at my notes, you know, after asking that question. I'm just cracking up inside just because it's like, here I am. I did come prepared. You know, I have a set of questions. Yeah. But by the same token, you know, I mean, I do let kind of the conversational nature of the interview, like kind of dictate where we're going to go. And so there are those moments though, and maybe I'll get beyond this point where I'll be like, okay, I can totally release from the notes, you know, but I've always worried about that kind of dead air where I'm just kind of like,
That was a fear of mine initially. That was a fear of mine initially until I realized that people aren't as hypercritical. And if you ask a question that seems off the wall, like out of left field or something, most guests will say, well, that, thank God, it's not the same old questions, not the ones I got on the last interview, rather than say, well, what kind of podcaster is he asking me a question like that? Guests are non-judgmental at that point, or at least not negatively judgmental. They will look at that as something as a positive. Well, thank God, at least this one's a little different, a little fun and interesting, and that's a question I have never been asked before, that kind of thing. They respond to that.
I did listen to your most recent episode. It was the one with singer-songwriter John McDonough.
Right. That was a couple of days ago. I think we've done four since then, but
oh really? Oh yes. My goodness. I just listened to it this morning. How could I have missed the four, four episodes since then?
I just published Amy Klein about an hour ago. I think published the one from last night, which wasn't really an interview. It was at the end of the month, every Wednesday, last Wednesday of every month, we do a movie review of a classic movie that's been around for 20 or 30 or 40 years. And last night we did The Rapture with Adam Lippy, who's a film critic and a film maker. So we kind of analyze old films and take them apart and ruin them.
That's really ruin them.
Yeah, spoil them and just make it so there's no fun to watch ever again for anybody. I don't think that's Adam. That's that not Adam's purpose in doing it. That, but it ends up being mine.
Have you guys done Citizen Kane yet? Have you ruined that movie for other people yet?
No, we it just started last month. So we did The Apartment and The Rapture now, and we're looking at what we're going to do next month. I might be a really obscure film called Soldier in the Rain, which is a Jackie Gleason, Steve McQueen movie where they're army buddies. But it's one of my favorites. Adam never heard of it before, and a lot of people I think never heard of it before. But we want to pick movies like that people may not be aware of.
Tell me, how do you get dialed in to your guests? How did you ask for them to come on? What does that look like?
Originally, I was going through, there were a lot of websites out there that, Matchmaker FM and Audrey.com and Podguest.com, all those kinds of things, Podchaser, whatever. There's a lot of them where you can hook up with guests and just put, and so I started that way. And was really aggressive at finding people I thought were interesting, asking them to be on. And then at some point, after I had done maybe 100 episodes or something, a couple of publicists started contacting me. They have either authors with books or people promoting their podcasts or television shows. So, and now I have so many publicists contacting me, and there's a website that I use called RadioGuestList.com for radio shows, podcasts, and television shows like that, where you just put out the kind of guests you're looking for, and then they come to you. So I get so many requests now that I could not possibly fill them all. I probably have 300 requests that we have not got back to this week.
Oh my! This week.
Yeah. Yeah, and basically what's going to happen, and we're not going to get all of them because I'll show them the calendar, what we have open. A lot of them won't do it. A lot of them will just ghost on me. We'll never hear from again. But, yeah, we get 300 requests a week, not 300 bookings a week.
That is a good problem to have. Are you managing all of that, or do you have people that are helping you?
I've had several production assistants off war a week at a time, sometimes 2 days at a time, sometimes 2 hours at a time. they quit pretty quickly. The business is, I guess it's a little overwhelming for people who, it's not a high-paying job, production assistant. I'm going to pay minimum wage $15 an hour or something like that. And so it's a lot of hard work. It's a lot of detailed work. And it's a lot of people just bail. It's like, wow, this is more than a... So to answer your question succinctly, I've done most of it over the last year, almost all of the work here, except for three instances where I've had production assistants, one last for a week, one last for 4 hours, and one last for probably a day or two.
Okay. It's a lot that end. I can imagine managing 300 requests a week. That's incredible.
Yeah, and that's just for my show. I also manage other podcasts for people who, for marketing purposes. So people want to write books to establish their authority in their field. We have them do a limited series podcast of interviews of experts in their field, use those, transcribe them, and put them into book form. So that's giving away, I guess, a secret a monetization source for podcasters is that book form, using a short form interview series for one person to establish enough interviews to put into a book to establish them some authority for their business so they can go on and speak about it to their, colleagues and stuff and use the book as an authority piece for themselves. That's where a big piece of monetization comes in if people want to chase that. A lot of podcasters don't want anything to do with that because that's real work, like corporate work. But it is the way to stay afloat, one of the ways to stay afloat.
Well, thanks for sharing that. I appreciate that. I was going to ask you, and I'm going to ask you anyway, what is that one piece of advice you want to give new podcasters or people that think that they want to get into this?
Don't get into it for the money, but since money is an essential part of it, be smart about it and have as many multiple streams of revenue as possible and don't close your mind to any possibilities for monetizing your podcast. In other words, one of my ways of monetizing a podcast is through referrals. I have a guy on who is an expert in franchising. He builds franchises for big companies, small companies, all that kind of stuff. I have an insurance guy who actually sells insurance to franchise people, like restaurants that own. Put those two together. They marry. They have. They do a $4 million deal. Both of them pay me a referral fee for that. So you got to be open to those kind of possibilities. When it comes to sponsorship, do not go with the anchor. We're going to plug in sponsors that pay you one penny for every 6,000 minutes you stream, that kind of stuff. Have a little bit of ambition and go out and sell your own sponsorship. Learn what it takes to pick up a phone, call a small business or a mid-sized business and say, I have a podcast that's reaching however many people. This is what we can afford to sell you to get more exposure for your business and be able to kind of promote that and do your own sales. You're going to get far more than that one penny a month you're going to get from Anchor or one of those other services, podcast hosting services that will plug in sponsors that you have no control over who's on your show. So those are my two pieces of advice as far as financial.
Let's circle back to your podcast. Let's project out into the future, 6 months, a year, 2 years maybe. Where do you see your podcast going?
More. I've had lots of celebrities on, but not enough to feed my. And when I say celebrities, I don't necessarily mean movie stars. Although in the music and comedy world, I prefer the bigger names if I can get them. But when I say celebrities, I mean people with real cash, people with real cash, people with real respect in their. So they're a superstar in their field, no matter what that field is. And like, if I'm going to get a self-help person, I want Tony Robbins. I don't necessarily want the guy who just wrote his first self-help book and is looking to promote himself. Although I love helping those people, I want to add as much value for the audience. So I want those big names. And because I think most of the interviews I've heard with them, people are missing a lot of the important questions that the audience really wants to know. People go by standardized, and I think I could get better information out of them than most. Maybe that's ego speaking, but I think I can get better and more valuable information out of them than most podcast hosts would at this moment, or even television hosts or radio hosts.
So before we wrap things up, Matt, I do have one more question for you. If your podcast gets developed into a movie, who would play the leading role?
Oh, that's a great question. Who would playing me?
Yeah.
You know what? Probably George Clooney.
I love that. Yes, yeah. I can see that.
He'd have to shave his head, but I think he'd be okay. I think he'd, you know, I like George, but I like the movies he's been in, and I relate to him as a person. He was a pig owner. I was a pig owner, pet pigs and stuff. So we have that in common, I guess.
So Matt, tell us where people can find out more about you and your shows.
MindDogTV.com is the website where you can get links to everything. The show can be heard anywhere you experience podcasts, any single platform. It's out there on the RSS feed. So it's anywhere you find podcasts. Go to MindDogTV.com. I'm on YouTube. You can look for Matt Napo or just YouTube.com/MindDog. And that's it. I mean, we're on all the social media stuff, but we don't make the best use out of some of the younger platforms. We're not on TikTok much, and stuff like that. It's just my theory on the social media stuff is Facebook. It was started with MySpace, but it's been an endless series of young people trying to get away from the old geezers. So the young people develop MySpace. They love it. The old geezers come on. The young people jump to Facebook. The old geezers find Facebook. The old people, the young people leave to go to Twitter or Instagram or whatever, and the old people go there. So it's a constant running away from old people. And I'm one of the old people.
Matt, I would love to keep in touch with you, maybe catch up down the road 6 months from now.
Sure thing. You could be on my show sometime and we'll chat long form, like an hour and a half or so.
Yeah, I was just thinking to myself, I'm bummed, you know, like we're running up on the end of our time here. So let me just say this. The name of one of your podcasts actually is Mind Dog TV, your mind's best friend. Matt, thank you so much for coming on. This was an absolute pleasure. I look forward to speaking with you again sometime soon.
Thank you for having me, James. It's been a real pleasure for me, too. Thanks.
Thanks again to Matt. Check the show notes for links to learn more about Matt and his show, MindDog TV. Please share what you got out of my conversation by leaving a review on podchaser.com. You can find out how to do this in the show notes, and do let me know what you need from me to make this show even better for you. And make sure you follow Podcast Tactics to keep learning more about podcasting in future episodes. Thank you.